Welcome to Spirits on Spirits, a podcast where we mix ghost stories with a little liquid courage. I'm Aiden.
And I'm Nate.
And together we'll dive into the eerie, the unexplained, and the downright terrifying, all while enjoying a drink or two. Each episode we'll explore haunted places, ghostly encounters, and paranormal mysteries, pairing them with the perfect cocktail to keep our nerves steady. So grab a glass, turn down the lights, and join us as we sip, shiver, and swap some spine-chilling stories. Because here at Spirits on Spirits, the only thing stronger than the ghosts are our drinks. Nate, do you want to go into what the drink of the day is?
Yeah, I can definitely go into the drink of the day. I think maybe you go into a little bit about what Spirits on Spirits is, what our idea is, how we're going to execute it, and then I'll talk about how the drink of the day tags into that or plays into that.
Yeah, so we're going to be choosing a theme to tell the stories based on, and then we'll each tell one story while we drink a...
We'll zoom out. What kind of stories? I know you said it briefly, but, like, what kind of story?
It's going to be all the spooky haunts of the area.
Spooky haunts.
Yeah.
So, some ghost stories while we're sipping on spirits.
Sipping on spirits.
Yeah. And, like you elaborated to or kind of alluded to, I think alluded to is the better of the two words. In your intro, are we going to be drinking the same drink the entire time there?
Each episode will have its own signature drink.
Yes, we will. Is that drink random?
No, it's going to be loosely based on what we are telling.
Very cool. So this first episode, this inaugural episode, for those of you that want to drink along with us, it is the Rum Runner. It is an ounce of light rum. It's an ounce of Navy Strength rum. It's an ounce of banana liqueur. Half an ounce of blackberry liqueur. 2 ounces of pineapple juice. 1 ounce of lime juice, freshly squeezed. However, I won't tell if you use the artificial stuff. Half an ounce of grenadine. The bottle was dusty, but the women were clean. And then for garnishes, you can do a brandied cherry if you like. You can also do a pineapple wedge if you like. Again, the garnishes are up to you. Have fun with it. Do what you want. Live your truth. But that is the drink of the day for this episode, the Rum Runner. We will get into, or I think Mr. Aiden over there is going to get into, how that relates to the topic of today's story, or at least one of the episodes on today's story. I think one of the topics from today's episode, a little flip there. I think my story does not necessarily relate to the topic that the drink is inspired off of. Yet it is still a very fascinating topic. But yeah, I think that's kind of a little rundown on the drink of the day, why we do a different drink of the day. And, yeah, I think that's it.
And you can find a picture and the recipe on our Instagram, which will be linked wherever you're listening to this podcast.
Nice.
Yeah, so we picked the Rum Runner because one of the stories, or the story that I'll be telling, is loosely connected to the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm, nice.
So we picked rum.
So I think before we get into the story, why, Aiden, tell the people why we're qualified to be talking about spooky things. Why are you and I, Aiden and Nathaniel, little old Aiden and little old Nathaniel, qualified to be talking about big old spooks? Spook City, Spooky Dukers. Why are we qualified to talk about the spooky aberrations of spirit? What are we? Why are we qualified?
Because we are a couple of Spooktown locals.
Ooh, where is Spooktown located, you ask?
Well, we are currently sitting in Spooktown, in my apartment in Spooktown.
Oh, nice.
Salem, Massachusetts.
One and only.
The one and only witch city.
Yes, sir.
The mecca of Halloween.
Oh, yeah. Now, are we new residents to Spook City?
Nope. We are born and raised local boys.
Yeah. No, born and raised Salem, Massachusetts.
Yep.
We have lived around, near spooky things, pretty much our entire lives. I mean, I know for myself, the house I grew up in was over, I mean, I think it was built in like 1771 or something like that.
Mine was like 1840.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, a lot of history. And I think that's the thing about Salem, where everyone's like, oh, why is Salem so haunted? Salem's not so haunted. Salem's a fake narrative, my dude. Salem has so much history here. There is a, like, it is, yeah, you're right. Your new development in the middle of nowhere in Kansas is not going to be haunted because it's only been around for a year. But Salem's been around since the 1600s. So if there's a place that's going to be haunted, it's going to be a place with more history, more pizzazz, more to do, more going on, more that's happened over the past couple hundred years.
Indeed.
Now, are you a believer in spooks, Aiden?
I'm an open-minded skeptic.
Open-minded skeptic. Tell the people what that is.
I understand that I don't understand, but I just don't know. I don't think I believe in it. Yeah. But who knows? Maybe this podcast will change my mind.
That'd be pretty cool.
Maybe reading about all the ghosts and hopefully eventually interacting with some ghosts.
Ooh, that'd be fun.
Will sway my mind.
Yeah, that'd be very fun. I think for myself, I am not necessarily like a full-blown believer, but I definitely fall more on the believer side than I do a skeptic side. I know that we really don't understand the science behind energy and what happens to energy when we pass away and all this kinds of stuff. So I definitely think I fall into the believer camp, have had some experiences myself that have kind of swayed me a little bit that way. But yeah, I maybe we'll get into those later. I don't think now's the time to get into those. I think we'll get into those a little bit later.
Respectable.
Yeah, but I think, yeah, to sum it up, we are born and raised in Salem, a place with a lot of history, so there's a lot of potential for, you know, spiriting around. And I think we, for this first episode, correct me if I'm wrong, Aiden, but I picked a place in Salem for this first episode, right?
Yep, same here.
Nice, nice. So I think we both tell kind of our stories of different places in Salem, what potentially might be haunting those places, and the sightings that have kind of caused us to go, huh, maybe that place is haunted.
Yeah. I will get into my topic first.
Well, hey, let's have a cheers first. Let's clink our spirits while we talk about some spirits.
That was a clink.
That was a really bad clink for those of you listening.
We're an uncomfortable few feet away to be clinking.
Yes, we are.
All right. Are we ready?
Yes, we are.
So, before we get into my haunt, I want to give you a little bit of backstory into the location that I'm going to be talking about. So, full disclosure, the place that I'm going to be talking about is Mercy Tavern, which is located right in Derby Wharf.
Yes.
Is right down the street from where we are sitting at the moment.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, so soon after Salem was established in 1626.
Wow, it was that long ago.
Yeah, it was going on 400 years ago. Dude, two more years, and then it'll be the 400-year anniversary.
That's going to be a crazy party.
That is going to be a crazy party.
That is going to be wild. I'm excited for that now. Didn't know I was excited for that until this moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so after it was established, it became one of the largest cities in the United States pretty quickly. Between the years of 1776 and 1812, so two major wars in the U.S., Salem was the busiest port for trade in the entire country.
Wow.
One of the most influential families in making it that prominent was the Derby family, who Derby Street and the Derby Wharf, where Mercy Tavern is located, are both named after. They were a merchant family credited with establishing trade routes with Russia and the East Indies.
Russia and the East Indies. They went that far.
Yeah.
Like the Derby family. That literally every... I'm pointing at Derby Street right now. For those of you listening, I am pointing at Derby Street right now. That, like, Salem has, what, 30,000 residents now?
Yeah, 30,000.
30,000, which isn't tiny, but it's not Boston. It's not New York. It's not Los Angeles. But that town, that street right there is... responsible. The people behind it are responsible for making Salem one of the biggest ports, and not one of the biggest port in the United States.
Yeah,
that's insane.
Super far reaches.
And far reaches too. Sorry, that was the whole thing that got me into it. Far reaches. The what was it? The East Indies?
Yeah, East Indies and Russia.
And Russia, from here, not like Sarah Palin Russia, like actual far Russia.
I was just thinking of that, too.
Yeah. Oh, I can see Russia.
I can see Russia. We cannot see Russia from
the
house.
No, it is damn far.
It is damn far.
It is damn far.
So, impressive
yes.
reaches impressive for the Derby reaches. Family. But it's estimated that as many as 1 in 10 ships traveling to Mauritius was owned by the family. Do you know where Mauritius is?
No, where's Mauritius?
It's located, like, in the Indian Ocean.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so
1 in 10 ships.
10% of the ships that were touching Mauritius
were owned by the Derby family.
Were owned by the Derby family down the street.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's insane.
So the OG, Elias Haskett Derby Sr., died in 1799, leaving the family business, estate, and fortune to his son, named, you guessed it, Elias Haskett Derby Jr.
I was going to say, are we getting a junior?
We're getting a junior.
Junior!
Junior B. However, and this is where things get interesting. Junior was a bit of a rebel.
Oh, really?
He wanted to get out of paying duties on the goods was importing.
Like, were they... correct me if I'm wrong, but from what you've said, it sounds like they were a wealthy family.
They were a wealthy family, but
they just wanted more.
I mean, dude, think about the fact that, like, the founding fathers were, I mean, creating an entire war around taxation. You can only imagine, like, what kind of margins the government was taking.
Yeah, that's fair.
It kind of makes sense that.
Yeah, he was trying to get out of it. You know what? That paints it in a very different light. I didn't think of it like that.
Yeah. But yeah, so to avoid having to pay duties, and to go undetected in doing so, he and some other merchants around Salem devised a plan to dig a series of tunnels underneath the city.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Tunnels under, wait, they planned to, or did they actually end up doing?
Well, yeah, so they did end up building the tunnels.
Tunnels under Salem.
Yeah, so there's an entire network of tunnels underneath Salem.
Oh my gosh.
Like
in black market network type, right? Like this was for stolen goods and stuff like that.
Not for stolen goods, but.
Or not stolen, sorry.
But for goods that were being brought in illegally.
Goods that they didn't want eyes on. So,
yeah.
Any kind of stuff like that. How does one get into these tunnels?
So there's several openings into the tunnels in the fireplaces.
What?
Of various buildings around Salem.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
That's so cool. And the fireplace is a different place than Salem.
Yeah. So, I mean, most of the entrances have been covered up by the city.
Oh, wow.
Since.
Sure. Yeah. It's
then,
pretty big.
Because, you know, it's obviously a hazard.
Yeah. You don't want parties down in the tunnel.
No parties happening in the tunnel. But so this site. Elias came up with the genius idea to build a park right in downtown Salem so that he could make bulk purchases of construction materials and also have construction going on and not arouse suspicion when he was building the tunnels.
So he made a whole park.
Yeah.
What park did he make?
So, dude, you'll get a kick out of this. It is none other than the Salem Common.
Wait.
The Salem Common.
The Salem Commons. Like, that massive, like, the Salem
Commons. The center of Salem.
Yeah, it's massive.
Yeah.
That was built because some dude needed to, like, buy a bunch of construction equipment and supplies and didn't want to create any sort of suspicion.
Yeah.
That's genius.
It is genius.
Like, genius, genius.
Yep.
And it sounds, I mean, from what it seems like, did it work?
Well, I'll get into that.
Oh, shoot. Okay.
So, at the time, the site for what is now the common was entirely marshland. Okay. So, Elias decided to fill in the grounds with dirt and establish this area as a public park.
Whoa.
So, by having this other project, obviously, he was able to kind of sneak around building the tunnel.
Sure.
And he, I believe that he ended up using the dirt from the tunnel to fill in the marsh.
This guy is on top of it.
At first, I was smart.
Like, oh, this little snob that's trying to get around taxes. Still probably similar opinion of him. But he at least sounds like he was pretty smart while he was doing it, too.
Yeah. But so, yeah, like I said, the tunnels have entrances in the fireplaces of houses all over the city. As you can imagine, this series of illicit tunnels deep below us, a town that's already famous for murder, has been the common thread in a series of local ghost sightings and stories. Yeah. So, the place that I'm going to be talking about today is Mercy Tavern. You're going to love this story because it's a part of history that you follow closely and you love. It is your favorite era of history.
What is my favorite era of history? Let me think. Ooh. Hold on. I'm thinking. I mean, are we talking wind in your face? Salt water just being splashed or
the cold sea breeze.
Oh.
Flowing through your luscious
hair.
Locks.
Are we talking Jolly Rogers?
Dude, Jolly Rogers.
Let's go. Pirates.
Yeah.
Oh, avast me, mates.
All right. So,
too loud. Sorry if that was too loud for you guys.
AirPod warning.
AirPod warning. Post AirPod warning.
So, for this story, I want you to close your eyes for a minute.
Okay. Close them.
Envision this scene. You're living in Salem in the 1700s. You and a few friends are getting some brews at the local tavern, just catching up.
Oh, okay. Local tavern.
Yeah.
Catching up. Nice.
Yeah. Cool. One of them asks, dude, where do you want to go next?
Where do you want to go next? Okay. So we're drinking at one place. Sorry, to set the whole scene for myself.
Yeah.
I'm sitting at one place. Me and the boys. 1700s, catching up.
Drinking some ale.
Talking about how we hate taxes.
Talking about how you hate taxes.
How this powdered wig is very itchy.
Yep.
How we want to be represented. From there, someone goes, yo, dude, place is kind of beat. We need a new location.
Dude, where do you want the nightcap?
I don't know. You tell me, man. I'm down.
Well, you've
had a couple ales.
You don't suggest it. Or maybe you do suggest it based on who in the friend group you are.
Oh, okay.
But someone in the group suggests the brothel.
Oh, yeah. That's not me in the friend group, but
it's also not me.
Probably would be dragged along. I would, depending on how many ales I had, be like, I could go.
Yeah.
I could go. Especially Mercy Tavern. Mercy Tavern's garlic fries, dude. You've had the garlic. Oh.
Garlic fries are bomb.
Bomb. If they had those garlic fries back in the day, you'd be like, oh, you want to go to the brothel? I don't know, man. Dude, the garlic fries.
All you can eat garlic fries at the brothel?
Ooh.
Game changer.
I'm there. I'm at the brothel now.
All right.
I'm at the brothel well, now.
Either way, you go. You go along with your buddies to the brothel. As the night goes on, you get more and more drunk. The brothel is loud and packed. But the later it gets, the less and less people are packing the place.
Oh, so we're shutting the brothel now.
Dude, you are closing the brothel. Until it's just you, your friends, and a few other patrons in the place. Suddenly, the door opens. And in walk three big, dirty, smelly men. The place goes quiet. You lock eyes with one of them, and before you know it, you have a bag over your head, and you're getting dragged.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That was 0 to 100 real quick. Wait, hold on. So I'm chilling. Some weird-looking dude walks in, and then, boom, bag over my head?
Bag over your head, getting dragged.
Dragged? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Why?
I'll get there.
Oh, okay.
So, you're screaming and fighting for your life, but it's no use. You are overpowered. And as you're being dragged, you feel something smash into your head and everything goes black. Whoa. Next thing you know, you wake up in a dark, dingy room, surrounded by barrels and rats. You can swear that the floor is moving back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Is it the hangover? Are you still drunk? What even happened last night?
Dude, I don't know, dude. This sounds like a wild night.
It is. It's a.
Did I imagine?
It's about to get even more wild.
Did I imagine the guy that put the bag over my head? Like, depending on how many ales you have, like, good. Anything's fair play right now.
Yeah, anything is. Well, it's about to get a lot worse.
Oh.
You stand up and stumble over to the door. As soon as the door is open, you realize why the floor is unsteady. You're on a ship. You look around and your heart sinks when you see it. Home. All the way on the horizon, behind the ship.
Wait, what? Wait, I'm on a ship?
You're on a ship.
Hold on. So bag over my head, wake up, on a ship, going away from Salem.
Yeah, so home is in the horizon. It's getting smaller and smaller as time goes on.
Oh my God.
You're on a ship. You look around and your heart sinks when you see it. To make matters worse, you look up at the sails and realize that the infamous Jolly
Uh-oh.
Roger is flying.
Uh-oh.
There's no going back
Uh-oh.
Now. You, my friend,
you're
are a pirate.
Drink up, me hearties, yo-ho. Yo-ho, yo-ho, a pirate's life for me.
Now, I'm sure
so
that
now
you're
a pirate.
Yeah, now you're a pirate.
And not the Johnny Depp Disney World version.
No,
like,
this is the
like
the
syphilis,
shitty, yeah.
Like, everyone's missing teeth, like, you're about to go stab some people,
yep.
Like type of pirate.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh. And you were just a normal person chilling in Salem 12 hours ago.
And now, dude, whether you like it or not, you're
a pirate.
The sea life is for you now.
Like, you have, like, if you're young, but, like, you could still have, like, a wife and kids or something like that.
Yep.
A job. Family.
A mortgage.
Well, do they have mortgages back then?
I mean, they couldn't buy homes cash back then, could they?
Could they?
I have no idea.
I actually have no idea.
They had interest, so I could imagine a world where they'd have mortgages.
Yeah, but, like, they weren't lending out money to the poor people.
Well, who's to say you were poor?
Yeah, that's fair.
Maybe you're a rich lad.
Dude, you know what?
Going to the brothel.
Like, if you're flinging corns, if you're flinging coins at... If you need some ass in your face for money, dude, you probably have some coin to spend.
Yeah.
How much do you think a brothel, a night with a lady of the night, I guess is probably the most kosher way to put it.
Taking inflation into account, like what would it be today?
Yeah.
$200.
But back then, do you think it was like a shilling? Like one shilling.
I don't know how much a shilling was. It could be a dollar. I have no idea.
I actually have no idea how much a shilling. Why did I use that?
I don't know.
How much? You know what? I'm going to Google that. How much is a shilling worth? How much is a shilling in U.S. dollars?
What do we got?
One shilling is worth 6 cents.
Of today's money?
Yeah.
So that's nothing.
What is a shilling? Where is a shilling used?
I think that's British.
Yeah, British shilling. Okay. But, like, you think it was a buck back then? A buck? I mean,
granted, a night at the brothel was a buck?
Granted, no. Like, the saying did come from somewhere. That, like, you're as fun as a $2 whore. Like, that saying did come from somewhere.
Well, yeah, maybe okay. It was Mercy Actually, that's Tavern. A good caveat.
Maybe
it depends
Mercy
on
Tavern.
What brothel you were going to.
That's fair. And the services.
Yeah.
I wonder if some dude wanted pirate role playing.
Oh.
And then he became an actual pirate.
Oh, dude, that's like the code word. If you went in there looking for pirate role play, they were like, all right, cool. Yeah, we'll definitely do that.
We'll hook it up. And he was like, this is not the role
This is not what I had in mind.
Not what I had in mind at all.
But so, yeah, dude, this was the fate of like a lot of young able-bodied men at the time, because while Salem is obviously famous for its witches, you know, witch city, many people don't realize that there is also a very rich history of pirates in the area.
Yeah.
Infamous sea captains like Blackbeard, Captain Kidd, and Captain Black Sam Bellamy would spend their winters down south where it was warm, and then they'd come up here for the hotter months sailing off the coast of New England.
That's crazy. Captain Kidd treasure is apparently buried within like 30 minutes of Salem Harbor in Lynn, but like it's supposed to be very close to Salem Harbor.
And they haven't found it?
Let me put it this way. I was pretty up to date on the story like 7 or 8 years ago, and they had not found it then.
I feel like that means they haven't found it.
No, I think
I feel like we would have heard about
that. Yeah, I feel like we would have heard about it.
Well, dude, maybe we got to go treasure hunting.
Dude,
that would be sick.
That would be so sick.
Conjure Sam Bellamy's, or was it Captain Kidd you said?
Captain Kidd.
Conjure up Captain Kidd's ghost.
I feel like
and he'll tell us where the treasure is. Chill.
Something tells me like pirate ghosts are probably the most aggressive of the ghosts.
Especially those guys. Yeah. Blackbeard, Kidd, Bellamy.
No, thank you.
They would probably kill us if they could.
Yeah. Can ghosts kill you?
I mean, I don't think that there's any confirmed cases of it happening.
But do you think there's some suspicious ones?
Well, there's poltergeists, so theoretically, like, they could bash your head with a rock or something.
Wait, what? I didn't think ghosts could kill you.
Well, but, like, they can allegedly manipulate objects.
That's fair.
So well, why couldn't they manipulate that object into your temple, you know?
That's a new fear unlocked.
Don't buy a haunted house.
That's, you know what? Easier said than done, especially in Salem.
This is true. Well, I think that my apartment is new enough to not.
Yeah, I think you're probably safe. But you are on Derby Street.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, maybe Elias will come.
Dude, that'd be crazy. First guest on the podcast.
Oh, that'd be sick.
Elias, dude, tell us why you didn't want to pay taxes.
Because fuck a British, mate. Fuck a crown. All right, so, dude, here's a fun fact for you.
Sure, hit me with it.
The top half of a skull that's believed to be Blackbeard's now resides in Salem's Peabody Essex Museum.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
So, what half of the skull are we talking about? The top half.
The top.
The dome piece.
The bowl.
The Dizzle Dome.
The Dizzle Dome. The Black Dizzle Dome. Black Bizzle Dome.
Yeah, I was going to say, that sounds not right.
The Black Bizzle Dome.
I think we should just err on the safe side and say the Blackbeard Dizzle Dome.
Fair enough. Yeah, the Blackbeard Dizzle Dome resides.
The top half of Blackbeard's head resides.
Across
the street. That is so cool.
Yeah, but it's locked away in a vault.
Why?
I don't know. I actually have no idea why they won't put it on display. But what I do know about it is that it was coated in a layer of, I think, silver?
Wait, what?
Yeah, it was, yeah, coated in a layer of silver, and it was used as a punch bowl by previous owners.
Oh, my God.
So, like, before they brought it to the museum to be an exhibit, it was being used, I think, in, like, a pub or something as a punch bowl.
That's, could you imagine having punch out of Blackbeard's head?
Well, can you imagine having a legacy like Blackbeard's? And finding out as a ghost that your head is being used as a punch bowl in some schmuck's pub.
Haunt the shit out of whoever did that.
Dude, so fast?
So fast. So many boos. So many uhs. Like, they would be so scared.
All of the uhs, dude. It'd be ridiculous. So my story resides in Mercy Tavern, formerly known as In a Pig's Eye. Which is located right across the street from Salem Harbor, which is in the Derby Wharf.
That's great.
The building that Mercy Tavern is now in was originally built as a brothel. It was super popular among sailors who were at port in Salem back in the day.
Okay.
And it offered what many of these men had been daydreaming about for months.
We don't need to say it. You know.
The
warm company of a lady.
However, if you were a young, able-bodied man, it was pretty dangerous to go to this establishment. Not just because of the syphilis, but also because there was a chance that you'd be kidnapped.
And forced to be a pirate. I would love to know, and I'm sure this probably doesn't even exist, but, like, a story of someone specific. Like, someone, like, Johnny One Way was chilling at the brothel, then became a pirate. Like, I want to know where all the places he got forced to go. Most of them probably died super quickly on shit, because they weren't pirates.
They had no, they didn't have a resume in piracy.
No, whatsoever.
Yeah.
That would have been terrible, dude. Not knowing how to sail or do any. Having a bed to yourself and then being, like, shacked up with 30 other dudes. Everyone has, like, lice and shit like that.
But that's part of why this was a necessary practice in piracy. Is because, like, conditions were terrible at sea. And especially in the line of work that they were in. Constantly looting and pillaging.
Yeah.
And, like, downing other ships. It meant a lack of, like, reliable and healthy crew.
That's crazy.
So due to this, ship captains would have, their crew go into establishments like the brothel and Mercy Tavern and kidnap young, strong dudes, to be in their crew.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So now onto the ghost stuff. So it's said that screams and fighting can still be heard from down in the tunnels where they were dragged.
Wait. So I didn't realize. I guess what you were talking about, the tunnels, that makes sense. But they use the tunnels to drag them.
Yeah, out. So I guess that's, yeah, I forgot to mention that part. So Mercy Tavern has an entrance to the tunnels because it's literally right there.
Yeah, it's right, like, there.
Right off of the dock.
Yeah.
And so they would bring these young lads down into the tunnels and drag them out to the boats through the tunnel.
Poor young lads, man. These
poor young lads.
That's crazy. So they got dragged. And so, okay, the ghost part of it is that you can hear the screams still.
Yeah, you can still hear, like, these guys struggling and screaming.
Oh, my God.
Down in the tunnels.
That would freak me out so much.
Yeah.
Just working at Mercy, like, changing a keg and just hearing someone go, like,
dude, imagine just, like, rolling silverware and all of a sudden you just hear, like, a struggle down in your basement.
Oh my gosh,
that'd be terrifying.
Oh my gosh. So that's the type of thing that, like, if a ghost is gonna exist, it exists there. Like, that's my thing, where it's like the history here is so complex and so layered that, like, you hear a story like that, and you're like, yeah, no, of course there's energy that still exists there from those people, those experiences.
No, and like you said, like, a lot of these guys probably died super quick.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that, like, a place that is so traumatic to them would be the place where they would go back.
Absolutely. That's crazy.
But another apparition that they see is pirates that come out of the water right across the street from Mercy Tavern.
Whoa.
And then...
yeah, because it's like, for those of you that haven't been to Salem, and hopefully are going to visit our lovely town someday, but it is, you have Salem Harbor, and then the, like, edge of Salem Harbor is where Derby Wharf is.
Yep.
And there's, like, a little area where a ship, what's the ship there?
The Friendship.
Friendship, sorry. I was getting the Fame and the Friendship mixed up, but there's a ship called the Friendship, and then there's, like, a little, like, beach area, and literally from that beach area, you could throw a rock to Mercy Tavern.
Yep.
So a ship could definitely pull up, and people could, like, row ashore in small rowboats to Mercy Tavern within, like, I don't know, what do you say, like, 5 minutes of being
in the park?
Like, you could be at Mercy Tavern. I'm sorry, I've never spoke English before. You could be at Mercy Tavern within 5 minutes of being in Salem Harbor.
Yeah, super quick.
Super quick. That's crazy. So they would see the ghosts come out of the
rise out of the water, and then they vanish right after they reach land.
Whoa. That's crazy.
Isn't that crazy?
That's insane. I believe it, though.
I do, too. Like, like you said, if anywhere is going to be haunted, it's going to be a super traumatic place like that.
Sure.
And it's so, like, the building itself is old.
Oh, yeah.
And it's been used in so many different ways.
Sure. I mean, you had brothels and garlic fries.
Yeah.
Both will love you equally as
unconditionally.
Well. Unconditionally. One might, actually, both will probably give you bad breath.
This is true.
Very, very fascinating story. Hopefully I can kind of keep that vibe or keep the level going. Like I said, my story is not necessarily one related to the tunnels. However, it is related to or stems from one of Salem's most famous, if not famous, events in its history.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking you could guess which we're talking about here.
Dude, is it like, are we talking like Hocus Pocus kind of stuff?
No, I mean the real deal. We're talking the real meat and potatoes of Salem's history.
Witches.
The witch trials. So I did a little, I'm no Hemingway. I'm no Edgar Allan Poe.
Sure.
But I did try a little story, and I want to give you kind of like a little bit of a story. You know how you had me close my eyes to set the scene of your story? So you don't need to close your eyes, but I'll give you a little bit of a story to kind of get you in the vibe of kind of, you know, the tale I'm going to be telling, the spirit I'm going to be talking about while we are on spirits. And actually, I'll let you know a little secret here. Multiple spirits.
Ooh.
Yeah, we're talking multiple spirits. One location, multiple spirits.
One location, many haunts.
Yep. The location that we are covering in my story is the Joshua Ward House, okay? I'm not going to tell you what that is. Actually, I'll tell you where it is. So it's on... is that Washington Street?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the Dunkin' Donuts on Washington Street, right across from the post office. There's a house that's tucked back there. Now I believe it's a bed and breakfast or an inn.
Actually. Yeah, I think it is an inn.
But it used to be a privately owned residence. And that's all I'm going to say right now. We're going to get into the history. We're going to get into the ghost. But for right now, I just want you to listen to my little story.
Oh, boy.
Echoes of the Past.
Oh, it has a name.
Oh, it has a title.
Oh, yes. I like it.
As the full moon cast an eerie glow over the cobblestone streets of Salem, a group of thrill seekers gathered at the entrance of the Joshua Ward House. Among them was Sarah, a young woman fascinated by the paranormal and drawn to the house's dark history.
Mm.
With trepidation, the group stepped through the raw iron gates and approached the imposing brick facade of the Joshua Ward House. Sarah shivered as a chill ran down her spine, sensing the weight of centuries-old secrets that lingered within its walls. As their guide led them through the dimly lit corridor, whispers of ghostly apparitions and tragic tales filled the air. Sarah listened intently, her imagination conjuring images of restless spirits trapped inside the house's haunted hall. Suddenly, a cold draft swept through the room, extinguishing the flickering candlelight. Sarah's heart raced as she felt the presence brush up against her skin. Sarah heard the faint sound of footsteps echoing through the house. With trembling hands, she reached out, grasping for something, anything, to anchor her in reality. Then, from the shadows, a figure emerged, a spectacle, a silhouette illuminated by the pale moonlight streaming through the windows. It was a ghost with hollow eyes staring into Sarah's soul with a haunting intensity. A ghost filled with tragedy. A ghost filled with horrors. But hopefully that sets the scene.
Dude, that was... Oof. Right? That brought me to a different place. Dude, you know
what? I'm not a bad writer. That was actually not bad.
Yeah, you really downplayed your writing abilities.
Yeah, right. All right, so the Joshua Ward House, it was built in 1784 by a merchant that you would guess by the name of...
Joshua Ward.
No, Phil Smith. No, I'm kidding. Joshua Ward. Joshua Ward, he was a wealthy merchant. He built this house in 1784. Now, the draw to this house, or what made it kind of famous among Salem locals at that time, was it was the first house constructed entirely out of brick.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so at that time, it was the first house that was constructed entirely out of brick.
So what, all the other ones were wood?
Yeah, or like maybe brick and wood and stuff like that. Oh, okay. Brick was very expensive back in that day.
True.
So to construct a house in a pretty, I mean, it wasn't a small house. He was a wealthy sea merchant. So to construct a house entirely out of brick was an impressive feat. Enough that George Washington actually stayed, or sorry, we don't actually know if he stayed in this house, but he toured it and wanted to stay here. There has been some rumors or kind of like local legend that he did end up staying there, but left halfway through the night because it was so haunted.
Ooh.
Yeah. But damn, there was a draw to this house due to its architecture and being constructed entirely out of brick. But because of that, there is a bust of George Washington on the second floor, I believe, to this day.
Oh.
It can be found in the second floor window. So that description kind of gives you like this, oh, shoot, the Joshua Ward House is a lovely place. George Washington wanted to stay there. It had an architectural feat that impressed all of those that lived in Salem.
Sounds like an impressive place.
Yes. However, it had been the spot of many horrific crimes. And actually, you know what? Let me rephrase that, because we don't know how many of the horrific crimes actually happened here, but it was the resident of one of the people that were most involved in the Salem Witch Trials. And the crimes that they committed in the Salem Witch Trials are some of those that we hear about still to this day. However, I would actually argue, because up until reading the story, I didn't know this name. And as someone who, you know, has been on these witch field trips since I was in fourth grade and learned about the witch trials and been to the Rebecca Nurse house and visited the graves and all of these things, I feel like I'm pretty up to date, or did feel like I knew a lot of the witch trial history, but I had never heard this name. So this property was owned by George Corwin. I will tell you what George Corwin did in a little bit and why he was an important member of Salem when it was the time of which the witch trials were happening. But this property that Joshua Ward's house was built on was the site of George Corwin's house. Okay.
Wait, so was, did Joshua Ward come before or after?
After. So, I mean.
So George Corwin's house was like demolished or whatever. Yeah, it was gone. And it was gone. Okay,
Joshua
gotcha.
Ward, I don't know if he bought the property exact or like right from George Corwin's estate or like if there was another owner in between, but Joshua Ward came along, 1784, built a house on the land of George Corwin's house. Okay. Mm-hmm. So where Joshua Ward's house is where George Corwin's house used to exist. Okay?
Gotcha. Yep.
So the Salem witch trials, to kind of give everyone a little rundown, I think, like, you know, a lot of people know the witch trials. They know there was this, you know, hysteria of witches, but to give kind of a more...
A refresher,
but with some more specific details than some people might have heard. Happened in the 1600s. It swept the town. It was a huge to-do. It was 1692 specifically when it happened. And it was started with a bunch of young girls claiming to be possessed by witches. And they were hysterical. They were having, you know, psychedelic hallucinations. They were screaming. They were doing things that in a God-fearing town were seen and looked upon as being so unnatural, so out there that it was only, like, the only possible solution was the devil himself was possessing these people.
Yeah.
And what made matters worse was the girls that were doing this behavior were claiming to be possessed by witches. And there were several members of the community that were claiming to, or the girls were claiming to be witches. So Sarah Good, Sarah Osborne, and Tituba. Now, the first two women, Sarah Good and Sarah Osborne, claimed that they were not witches. So they denied the claim of witches. But Tituba not only admitted to being a witch, but she also claimed that there were other witches hiding in the community. And that set everything off. So she was like, yep, I'm a witch, and there's a bunch of other witches here, and everyone just went crazy.
Now, I do want to preface all of this by saying that I do believe Tituba was a slave. And,
yes, she was a slave, and a Caribbean
there's
slave.
There's a large conspiracy out there, which I would bet is correct, that she was coerced into saying the things that she said.
Yes, I think there's you're probably right. Although I will say, so in 1976, there was an article in Science Magazine that did a study that looked at what could have caused the symptoms. And the biggest kind of thing that their research pointed to was that a lot of the bread that they were eating back at that time could have had the potential to being exposed to a fungus or rotting and having a fungus. So they're thinking the most likely outcome was that these three girls ate rotten bread that had a fungus that was causing some sort of psychedelic episode.
Yep.
So really these girls were tripping balls and freaking out. And then these three women got blamed for it. And then Tituba probably, like you said, got coerced into like saying she was a witch and there was other witches out there. Okay. Yep. Now, one of the biggest pieces of this witch trial, like you said, was there was a coercion that probably happened. And once I get into, you know, our main character for this story, it will make sense that there probably was a lot of people that were out and about with ulterior motives during this time.
Right.
And I think one of the biggest proponents of this, meaning like one of the people that had the biggest ulterior motives out there was George Corwin. Now, would you know who George Corwin was if I was to give you $100? Do you know who he was in the town?
If I'm remembering correctly, was he a judge?
He was not a judge. So he started off as a town official, and he was charged with, like, put in charge of running the trial proceedings. However, on May 1692, he was elected as the high sheriff. So he became the sheriff of Salem at the age of 25.
Dude, that's you.
Yeah. Well, yeah, like my, I guess I'm 25.
That's me in a week.
Yes. Like that's I'm crazy. 25. That would mean be me being elected the sheriff. So the witch trials were already going on at this point, and he got elected sheriff while they were already going on.
That's terrifying.
So he got elected sheriff, was probably due to nepotism. Like, he had some family members that were in powerful positions. He had several uncles, as well as his father-in-law, that were judges or justices, because they weren't judges yet, because we weren't a colony slash a country yet, right? They were still called justices, I believe. But he was named the high sheriff, and the trials were already underway. So it was, however, like, things were about to ramp up. He was about to play a much bigger part. He was, you know, an official that was, like, part of these proceedings. He was, you know, had a position of power during that time, but nothing like sheriff. And once he got elected sheriff, everything just kind of went from bad to worse.
Yeah.
So he was going to start to play a large role in the convictions and having people being convicted of these crimes of witchcraft. But he was also a large proponent and one of the main facilitators of torturing these people as well.
Ooh, yeah. Not a good recipe.
No, so he was torturing them, and basically what he was doing was torturing them and getting convictions out of them.
Yeah.
Do you know his favorite form of torture was?
Oh, do I even want to know?
So it's pretty gnarly. Like, actually, it's not, like, terrible, but it's, like, pretty gnarly for our listeners out there, just as a little bit of a warning. But his favorite form of torture to coerce a conviction, meaning, hey, you're a witch. And then they'd go, no, I'm not. And he'd go, yeah, you are. And they go, no, I'm not. He goes, all right, well, we'll see if you're a witch after this. And he would tie their hands to their ankles while they're standing upright. So he's forcing them to bend all the way over, and he would have them stand like that until the blood starts to run through their nose.
Wait, that happens?
Yes. If you stand facing down for long enough, the blood will start to run through your nose.
I had no idea that that happened.
Mm-hmm.
I knew about the, I guess, not the form of torture, but the way that they would get convictions out of witches for a little while was they would throw them in a river, and if they floated, then they were witches.
Yeah.
And if they didn't float, then they were
which is
dead, but also innocent.
Terrible strategy.
Terrible strategy. So it's a lose-lose.
But yeah, he was a big proponent and a big fan of that specific method of tying people's hands to their ankles and just having them stand there fully bent over until the blood ran out.
That's actually not as, it's not as, like, directly violent as I was expecting.
Yeah, but think about how torturous that would be.
Like, yeah, no, it, I mean, I think it's bad, like, yeah. Don't get me wrong, but it's not as, like, it's not like getting, like, drawn and quartered or something like that. Like, it's not like I'm ripping your limbs off. It's like you're bending over.
Yeah, and I think so that's the thing, too. So he was just, like, I'm starting to paint the picture for you, but you can kind of already tell, like, Not a good dude. Not a good dude. Like, vibes were low when he was around, type of thing.
Sure.
But, like, some of his first hearings that he was involved in were Sarah Good, Sarah Wiles, Susanna Martin, and, like, probably one of the more famous ones, Rebecca Nurse. Like, everyone's heard of Rebecca Nurse.
So, like, you're giving him a lot of power in high-profile cases.
Yes.
Immediately.
Immediately. So he was, like, he was in charge of the whole thing. He had to transport them. He was also arranging their hangings. He was, like, in charge of their convictions. He was literally, like, as the saying goes, he was literally judge, jury, and executioner.
Yep.
Like, in one of the more famous quotes that came out of the witch trials was Sarah Good, when she, like, said to him, he was like, "You are a liar. I am no more a witch than you are a wizard. And if you take away my life, God will give you blood to drink." she said that. And then the trial was over and he declared her guilty. And then he hung himself.
Wow.
Yeah.
So he was, so correct me if I'm wrong. So he was sheriff,
mm-hmm.
but he also was allowed to hang people. Like, yeah. I thought that that was like a designated
thing. No, but that's what I'm saying. Like, literally he was judge, jury, and executioner. That's like, wild. I don't think he was actually the judge in these cases, but he literally was the one that was like being like, you're a witch. They'd go, no. Then he'd torture them till they'd say they were a witch. Or in some cases, like in Sarah Good, like she held out and she was like, I'm not a witch. And he was like, yeah, you are. And then he hung.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Now, this is where kind of the ulterior motives come into play. Okay. It was widely reported that after he would hang these people or kill them, or, sorry, convict them of being witches and then execute them for their crimes, it was not uncommon to see Mr. George Corwin himself at their houses stealing their property. So he would go into their houses and just take all their valuable stuff after they were dead.
What a scumbag.
Yeah. No, so this guy was not awesome. Like, not awesome in any way, shape, or form. So, yeah, he would definitely, like, go to their houses. There was even, like, I mean, there's some reports, these are more like myths and legends, but there were some reports that he would like even lure them to his house and then torture them in the basement of his house,
which is
the Joshua Ward house.
Oh my god. Yes.
Those claims have not really, like, there hasn't really been much evidence that has supported those claims,
but if it's even half right,
yeah,
bad.
Especially for that. So yeah, I mean, it's crazy. So he would, like, trap them in his basement and then torture them himself. Again, I don't know if there's much evidence to support those, but all around, like, if he was in your life, things were not going awesome type of thing.
Yeah.
But George Corwin was involved in all 19 of the deaths that came as a result of the Salem witch trials. So every single death that happened from the witch trials, he was involved in.
Tough.
Yeah. So talk a lot about like having blood on his hands.
Yeah.
Like, if there was someone that was going to attract bad energy and like bad,
it's this guy.
Apparitions and spirits and all that stuff, it would be this guy. Poor Joshua Ward, dude. Like, he did nothing to deserve this energy in his house.
He saw a cheap piece of land and he was like,
yeah.
He was like, oh, there's nothing wrong with it. No. What are people why are people passing on this place?
Yeah.
Because of George Corwin.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing, too. So, like, it was reported, and I think it was, like, something that people were, like, pretty noticing as the trials went on, as the more and more people were getting executed, and he was doing all of this in Salem. He was, like, taking more and more pleasure out of it. So, like, I don't know how people, like, noticed this, but they were, like, they could see that he was taking pleasure out of this, and it was becoming more and more pleasure type of thing.
So, he was, like, would he have been, like, a psychopath?
I was gonna say, like, I mean, it's giving.
It's giving.
It has serial killer vibes. Like, I feel like this
he is a serial killer.
No, but, like, literally, I think this is one of the things where it's, like, if this dude was born in, like, 1970s and stuff like that,
yeah,
I feel like he would be a serial killer. However, because it was the 1600s, he was the sheriff.
And he was given the green light to do all the things that he did.
Another, like, famous victim of his was Giles Corey, who, again, was executed.
More weights.
Yep.
Yep.
As we all know, or maybe not we all know, but Giles Corey was one of the only men or warlocks that were executed during the Salem witch trials. He was imprisoned. He had many accusations against him. They were claiming all sorts of different things. So, you know, him escaping prison, a woman claimed that a spirit rose from the dead to tell her that Corey was the man who murdered them. So there was a bunch of evidence. Like, I'm doing air quotes, like, evidence against him. I will also say, from a bunch of stuff that I've read, Giles Corey was not a stand-up dude either.
No, he was abusive.
Yeah.
To his wife.
Abusive to his wife.
He actually, like, accused his wife of witchcraft.
I think he did accuse his wife of witchcraft. I think he was abusive to his wife. There was, like, other claims, too, that, like, and I think it's so funny how, like, we look at things through the modern-day lens versus, like, people looking at things through the 1600s lens. Like, back then, one of the big things was that he was seen chasing, like, young girls through, like, the town center and stuff like that. And they're like, oh, he's a witch. He's chasing young girls. No, probably not a witch, but still probably equally as bad intentions with that kind of stuff. So definitely, like, not a stand-up character himself. But nonetheless, he was accused of witchcraft. George Corwin thought it was enough, and he ended up prove that he wasn't, but George Corwin felt that he was and crushed him to death.
Well, so here's what I do know from my knowledge of the times and crime back then, is if you admitted to being a witch, then all of your lands were seized by the government. Whereas if you didn't admit to it, but were still murdered because of it, it would go to your next of kin. So Giles Corey didn't ever admit to being a witch, and he demanded more weight because he wanted his lands to go to his son.
That's very smart. I will say the other one too. So he kept delaying his trial. So I actually don't think he had, now, like, going over my notes and stuff like that, totally forgot. He didn't have an official trial. So he had to submit himself to be tried by God and country for the official trial to begin. And it was a formality at the time. And he had to give verbal consent for the proceedings to begin. But he kept saying nothing. So, like, when they were like, do you agree to be tried by God and country? And he would say nothing. But he kept delaying so long, he got sentenced without an official trial. And he was given, I'm going to butcher the Latin of it, but pene forte et dure, which is where you get pressed to death. So that's where you get crushed to death.
Yeah.
And he's the only person in the history of the United States who has been killed in this matter due to court order.
The only one?
Only one. In the history of the legal system that has existed on the land that would later become the United States, the only person to be killed in that matter.
That is wild.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And as you could guess, and as I said earlier, George Corwin was the official that oversaw the execution. It was recorded that Giles Corey did not speak at all during his execution, except once where he asked George Corwin place more weight on his body. It was also, like, so there was reports that George Corwin, I'm trying to think of the best way to phrase this right now. Like, it was reported that he really didn't show any emotion during any of this. Like, it wasn't, like, he wasn't like, oh man, this guy's getting pressed dead. I'm sorry, we have to do, like, he was just, like, flatlined, no emotion whatsoever. There's also a report that at one point, he used his walking stick to push Giles Corey's tongue back into his mouth.
Oh.
Yeah. So while this dude's getting pressed to death, his tongue is sticking out, and George Corwin just, like, flip, walks up to him, and then just pushes his tongue back in his mouth.
I mean, talk about kicking a horse while he's down.
Yeah, no, exactly. But, like, I think, like, it's painting the picture of someone with no emotion, like, evil. Like, I think this guy was evil, is what it seems like.
Yeah.
And then after he died, George Corwin invaded, or, like, broke into Corey's house and took all of his money and his possessions.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
So even though, technically, by law, that should have gone to his next of kin.
Yeah, no.
What a dude. Yeah. What a dude.
So, yeah. Crazy. And I think that's one of those things. So, Joshua Ward, obviously, like, I think, you know, you look at it and you're like, whoa, these are some crazy stories. How did Joshua Ward, like, buy this plot of land? Or why did he buy this plot of land? I think it's just one of those things where it was like, you know, almost 100 years after that, the story's fake. Like, 100 years ago, like, if something happened here, do you think, like, no.
Not a chance.
The old Salem jail, the place that they used to hang people in the kitchen, literally the execution bed, like, where the floor drops down is sitting in the kitchen, is turned into luxury condos and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that was 100 years ago. So I think, like, he just was like, eh, like, this land was, like, I think
if anything, it's, like, exciting to own such a historic plot of land.
Yeah, so I think it's just one of those things where, like, it just...
People own it now. People own it today. So,
mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think it's one of those things where it's, like, the story's just faded enough, and he saw this nice plot of land, and he wanted to buy it. So, the history of that spot is very interesting. But now, if you want to get into the ghost,
dude, get into the spooks.
You want me to spook you up?
Dude, spook me up.
Spook you up. I'm going to spook you up big time. So, there are a bunch of stories of, like, interactions with ghosts at this spot. As you can guess.
That makes sense.
Makes sense. But there are three main spirits that people report kind of interactions with.
And so let me just clarify that now it's, what is it, the Merchant Inn, I think?
Yeah, I believe so.
So that's the building that we're talking about?
Yes, the Merchant Inn. Merchant Inn. Yeah, so it's called the Merchant. So it's not called the Merchant Inn. It's called the Merchant.
Okay.
But it like Google says, it's a boutique hotel in a 1700s red brick building with high-end chic rooms and a plush lounge in Paris. That sounds very lovely.
It does sound very lovely.
You know what they forget to include?
All of the fucking dead people in
I was going to say the three ghosts that currently reside.
That's a much nicer way of putting it.
Mm-hmm. So, three spirits, okay? Now, one of the spirits that currently resides is one that they have nicknamed the Strangler.
Don't love that already.
No, so the Strangler, no one knows who the Strangler is. Like, no one has been able to kind of pinpoint, like, what ghost or what aberration the Strangler. The Strangler is believed to be no one other than the High Sheriff, Mr. George Corwin himself.
Ooh, okay. Yeah.
So it is reported, whatever you want to say, that George Corwin died of a heart attack while at his home on April 12th, 1696.
Wait, so he was, like, still in his 20s, right? Because he was 25 when he was elected.
When was that?
Well, it would have been, what, 1692?
Was it?
Yeah, if he was elected in the middle.
Yeah, hold on. When was that? I have it up here. Yeah, 1692. Wow, yeah, he died really
early. So he was like 29.
Yeah. The other thing, and no one even pointed this out. I am really the only one that just noticed this. 1696. What stands out to you there?
I don't know. What should?
If you flip that 9 upside down, what does it become?
666.
No one else has pointed that out, but, and is it related? I don't know.
But we'll let you decide.
Yeah, we'll let you guys decide. But he apparently died of a heart attack on the property on April 12th, 1696. Now, it is also rumored that he was buried on the property as well, too. Potentially even in the basement, they say.
Damn.
Yeah. They, from what I can tell, no one can really confirm nor deny whether or not he was buried in the basement, but they do think that he was so hated, Like, he was involved in all 19 deaths and over 200 arrests during the Salem witch trials. Oh, my trials. God. So, he is, like, yeah. Like, he is so hated that he, like, when he died, his family, I think, was like, we can't just put him in a graveyard because people are going to
desecrate the grave. Yeah.
Absolutely desecrate the grave. And I think one particular, so there's a particular story that kind of led the family to be like, oh crap, we can't put him out there type of thing, was Mary English. So Mary English was arrested and accused of, you know, witchcraft and crimes of witchcraft. And George Corman, per usual, like, duh, went to her house and took all her belongings. Mary's husband, Philip, he was a very wealthy, I believe, merchant at that time, but he was pretty upset with George Corman's actions, rightfully
as,
so.
As you are.
But he could do nothing to stop him because he was in hiding, too, because he actually got accused of witchcraft, too. So I think George Corman was like, both these people are witches, also they're really wealthy, completely unrelated, though. None of their nice stuff is going to be in their house tomorrow.
If you see me in their house, no, you didn't.
Yeah, exactly. So he was in hiding, so he couldn't do anything at the time. But he, Philip English, vowed to get revenge one day. So he was like, George Corwin, I will get revenge on you. That's exactly how he said it.
Yeah, no, that's, I'm yep. sure that that's how he mm-hmm. sounded exactly.
So, then several years after the hysteria died down,
yep.
Philip English, being a wealthy person and like having access to wealthy people resources, actually sued George Corwin.
Oh,
so he sued George Corwin, and he sued him for stealing his property, but Corwin had already conveniently lost all the possessions. So Corwin had no money, no possessions at this time, so he couldn't pay the fine. So he was actually put in prison for his crimes. However, that wasn't even, like enough to pay for it. So, or, I mean, again, a lot of this is hearsay, like legends and rumors and stuff like that, but, that wasn't even enough. So when he passed away, English declared that he was going to steal Corwin's body, as yet another way to get revenge on Corwin.
You know what?
Yeah.
From all that I've heard about Corwin today, part of me hopes that he found a way to do that.
Yeah. I will say, unfortunately, though, that is rumor. And they have actually debunked it, and that he is in the family. So, unfortunately, not unfortunately, because I think everyone should be put to rest peacefully. But George Corwin has made it to a peaceful final resting spot that is not in the basement of that house. Nonetheless, though, there has been multiple reports that people have been choked while on the premise. Okay, so all of these accounts have been on the second floor of the house.
You know, actually, now that I think about it, though, strangling kind of makes sense with Corwin because he hanged so many people.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, so there was a book, Ghostly Haunts, that someone described it as, you know, someone was holding their throat and squeezing. And the, like, craziest part was this visitor was completely alone. So, like, they either ate a peanut and were allergic to it and didn't know that.
Yeah.
Or they were, like, you know, getting strangled by a ghost. And then, so, the reason that Corwin's ghost was nicknamed the Strangler, was related to the rumor that he would personally interrogate or, like, you know, really torture and strangle those who were accused of being witches in his home. So again, no proof, but this is something that was being said, and then all of a sudden now there's a ghost a couple hundred years later that's strangling people. So
yep.
Yeah. No, it was definitely so. And again, like I said, all of those happen on the second floor. There's another one. So people are also under the assumption, or kind of, I think some people are thinking that Giles Corey and his spirit might even reside in that house. A large majority, so a lot of people that are employees that have worked there in the past have blamed Corey's spirit for many of the paranormal activities or occurrences that have happened there. So, like, you know, the stereotypical stuff. People have reported pockets of chilled air in a heated room, books and pictures falling, and candles being melted when they were never lit.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. So there was one, like, unique thing that has kind of come up a couple of times that make people think it was Giles Corey's spirit. So as the candles melted, without being lit, they would consistently form the shape of an S. Think that's a sign of Giles Corey and his intrepid, so his ghost, the S standing for sheriff. So meaning that he's, you know, seeking some sort of retribution or retaliation against Corwin for crushing him to death.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I don't necessarily know why they're thinking Giles Corey's making the S. Maybe it's Corwin that's making the S. Yeah,
it seems like kind of a loose connection.
Yeah.
But
I'm crazy the fact that candles that are never being lit are consistently making the shape of an S.
Yeah. I mean, that's objectively weird.
Yeah, that is objectively weird. And then the third one that people think is a witch. So people think there is a female witch.
Like one of the convicted witches?
Yeah, I think so. There's obviously, you know, a lot of reports that, like I've just said above, that have been like, you know, male spirits and stuff like that. But there is also the report of a female spirit haunting the top floor of the house.
Hmm.
So that is the one that they think is a witch. There was a Christmas party. So back in 1981, Carson Realty was a business that was working out of the Joshua Ward house. There was a company-wide Christmas party in the house. And so with so many festivities going on, a coworker decided to take some Polaroid pictures of the scene to save as a memento. He snapped a quick picture of a coworker in front of some of the decorations at the party. When the picture was developed, though, the light-haired coworker was not in the photograph. Instead, in the grainy image, was an extremely pale woman with a head full of dark, curly hair.
Oh, that's creepy.
Yeah.
I mean, do we have any records of any of the witches having curly hair?
I don't know. That's not something I know off the top of my head, but I think, like, if you have to think about, like, the, like, demographics that were coming over at that time, hygiene, the salt air, like, I think curly hair was one that was
probably pretty common.
Common.
Yeah.
Who had it specifically, I don't know. But I do know that that is something that they, that was definitely around at that time. But this was a big to-do. Like, you can find this picture out there pretty commonly. Like, it was in news reports, all that kind of stuff. And because of that, in the following couple months and stuff, many people came to the Joshua Ward house to look for clues. Hmm. I will say no one has been able to identify the woman. So to answer your kind of question from a couple seconds ago, there hasn't been like a, oh, Rebecca Nurse had curly hair. That's definitely Rebecca Nurse or something like that. But they do think that it was one of the spirits of a witch that was killed by George Corwin. And I think the other interesting thing about that specific spirit is that a lot of people, that are encountering, and actually the only people that are really encountering interactions with that specific spirit are men. So there isn't, that spirit isn't really interacting with a lot of women guests or patrons of, you know, the premises. It's really only men. So it's men, and they're leaving the house, and they have, you know, weird scratches, or they're feeling an uncomfortable feeling, like just like weird vibes from another person in the room, and like feeling like they're getting watched when they're inside and outside the house and stuff like that.
Interesting.
Yeah, really interesting. No explanation. Really, like, again, like, none of this really has an explanation, but there is a lot of stuff that has gone on in that house because of Corwin's, you know, activities and stuff like that. I think the craziest thing, too, is, like, he is buried in the Broad Street Cemetery. Like, we can probably see George Corwin's grave from, like, the window right there.
Oh, he's...
Yeah.
Buried right yes. there.
Oh. So, like, the person that did all this is right there.
That's crazy, though, that he's buried right there, but we don't know where his victims yeah. are all buried.
No. Yeah. No, and I mean, there's a lot of stuff. So, I mean, like, the visitors are getting, like, the... I'm trying to see if I missed anything. Throats and the squeezing. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. But I don't know. Give me your thoughts. Like, what are you thinking?
I mean, I definitely think that the strangler, it sounds likely, is Corwin because of the manner in which most of his victims died.
Yeah.
I'm not super convinced about Giles Corey being the S-ghost.
I see my initial reaction to that, I agree with you. I think my initial reaction was like, maybe they're both Corwin. Corwin's doing both.
Yeah, or, I mean, maybe Giles Corey's there too, but I just don't... I think that it's kind of a stretch to say that because it's an S, it's like, oh, that's the sheriff.
Yeah, it's...
Or it's like, him saying that he wants retribution against the sheriff. I think it would be more likely that it's like someone whose name starts with an S or something like that.
I completely agree.
And then, yeah, I think that it is highly likely that if there is a female ghost on the property, it's probably going to be one of the quote unquote witches who got convicted.
Yeah.
Because why wouldn't you want to go back and haunt the place that like your convictor lived? Especially at the beginning, I feel like right after you die, you probably want to go haunt the crap out of them.
Yeah.
And then maybe it's like you choose one place to be, and then that's kind of where you are. So
yeah, where you get stuck.
Maybe she's just kind of stuck there now.
I believe that. And I think it's interesting that, I mean, that's an interesting one because, like, you know, the other ones, you're like, oh, why? It's male spirit. And you're like, yeah, but, like, there's no real evidence. That one, there's reportedly and, like, allegedly a picture of a female spirit.
Yeah, that's
so that's
cool.
Like that there is some actual, like, if you believe in that stuff, like visible proof of it being a female entity.
Maybe
it wouldn't be a female entity that's doing all of it. Maybe it's Sarah
Goodman. Oh dude, maybe that's the S.
Yes.
Yeah,
and she's strangling everyone.
Yeah, no, I would believe a lot faster than I would believe that it's Giles Corey.
I mean, again, I have no idea.
Yeah.
No idea.
I have no idea either.
It's very cool.
But, yeah, no, that was... Dude, your story at the beginning was beautifully written.
Thank you.
you definitely downplayed your ability to write, so that was a nice surprise.
Nice. Well, that was my story. I think I definitely agree that that grounds are probably haunted by someone or something.
Yeah, I mean, allegedly George Washington himself, the father of America was afraid to stay there, so
he wasn't scared to do anything.
No,
except for stay in that house in Salem.
The dude led a ragtag group of schmucks into battle and won against the greatest empire on earth.
Yes,
but he was afraid of
to sleep
probably alone. George Corwin.
Yes, that's crazy. I think, dude, I don't think we have any better way to top that. I think we got to end on that.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. So, hey.
This has been Spirits on Spirits, episode 1.
Yeah. Hopefully you guys tag back in and listen to episode 2. We're going to be coming out with episodes pretty consistently, especially at this beginning. We're going to be giving you guys a lot of episodes to to listen to out the gate. If you guys have any feedback and stuff like that, we're going to have all our social medias linked. If you guys have any interest in giving us stories, so like maybe your own personal accounts or, you know, locations that you think, or even cocktails. We like cocktails. That's an important piece of the podcast. Yep. Cocktails that you think would go great with different stories and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, we want this to be a podcast that you guys are equally as invested in. So want to make sure that we're doing it the right way with your guys' input. So like I said, we'll link all our social media below. We're going to have this up and running for you guys, and we're going to make sure we have a lot of episodes coming down the pipe. So you guys will definitely get your fix of spirits on spirits.
And that's a wrap.
That's a wrap.